Welcome to the APC podcast. We've got our producer back, and we've got a week one victory to recap. Alex Patakis, Ben Foldy, and Zach Rapport, who has returned from the desert, where he was able to catch the game, despite telling all of us to leave him the bleep alone. Then you liked my tweet, and I was like, wait a second. Did you think that you wouldn't be able to find the Packers game out there? Or did you think that you would just be, like, too busy?
It's that I thought we would be too busy, and okay. We had sort of this agreement that we would not devote time on our short vacation to watching football. And it just turned out that we just didn't have anything to do. So
nice.
We found the one Packers bar in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Howie's sports page, full of 85-year-old sun-baked Packers fans in all their drunken glory. It's a good time. Good time. Howie's. Highly recommended.
It was a good time for most Packer fans watching this one. A 17-9 victory over the Seahawks. We'll recap it. Also want to mention, we will update the standings in our pick'em pool. Congratulations to those of you who had any amount of success. I was terrible at picking games.
Yeah,
we were all this thoroughly week. Mediocre to bad.
It's hard to do in week one.
I believe in my intro email to listeners, I said, like, thanks for enrolling, and we're looking forward to you showing us how much more you know about football than we do, which is already playing itself out after 1 week.
Yeah, it certainly is. You can interact with us on Twitter, at Alex Patakis, at Ben Foldy, at Zach Rapport. It's real easy. It's all our names. If you go to acmepackingcompany.com and you go to the podcast page, you can, like, find them actually written out and stuff there. The APC podcast at gmail.com if you want to reach us via email, some longer form stuff, or if you just don't have Twitter. And follow the show on Twitter at the APC Pod. You know, the podcast is it's got a mind of its own. It's very good at responding and getting back to all of you who reach out. So, all right, let's do this. It's always fun to win the first week of the season. It's especially fun when it's the Seahawks, because no one likes the Seahawks. And
we all kind of like the Seahawks, though.
Well, I mean, okay.
Mina Kimes likes the Seahawks.
I like the Seahawks a lot until they play the Packers.
Yeah,
and then I remember that I fucking hate them.
I mean, okay. Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I
they're the Packers' biggest rival, right? Because they're successful.
I'd say they're the biggest rival.
I don't get, like, really juiced up for Packers Bears.
No.
I'm sorry if that makes me, like, a bad Packers fan. The Vikings looked okay. Maybe they'll be, like, a nice challenge this season.
Vikings looks pretty good.
But they're chippy as hell when the Packers and Seahawks play. We got a guy thrown out of the game, Jeremy Lane, for throwing a phantom punch. I didn't really see a punch.
Yeah, they got jobbed by the refs.
They did
There's no doubt about that.
And I think Randall Cobb kind of egged him on a little bit at the beginning of the game when he ran him over and then taunted him. And Randall Cobb has said stuff about Jeremy Lane before and how he took a cheap shot. I think it was like a year ago or something. And this is what I mean. There's, like, legitimate rivalries between these two teams, and it's great. And, oh, by the way, our defensive coordinator just happens to own their quarterback.
Yeah.
I take a great amount of pleasure in watching Russell Wilson sit on the sidelines frustrated and just have, like, no success at all and run for his life. I almost enjoy that more than I enjoy watching Aaron Rodgers play and have success.
Between their Seattle's terrible offensive line, Nick Perry, Mike Daniels, I mean, Russell Wilson was really doing the old rope-a-dope there. he was on the ropes, yeah, like, from the very first snap.
Yeah.
That was fun.
So I think, like, the big thing, I mean, obviously the defense has dominated most of the headlines and all the talk, you know.
Rightly so.
The discussion, rightfully so, right? I mean, we were blanked in the first half. First time since, I think, 2004 the Packers have been shut out in a half of football, or the first half of a game. And then, you know, the offense got going a little bit thanks to the defense. The biggest play in the game, arguably, that sparked Green Bay's, you know, second half was Mike Daniels, I guess, stripping the ball, even though it kind of looked like Russell Wilson just let it go. But Mike Daniels
strip
sack
recovered by the inimitable Kyler Fackrell.
Exactly. And then one play later, Ty Montgomery punches it in, and all of a sudden they're off and rolling with the lead for the rest of the game. So the defense, do we believe that they are, I mean, it's one game in, I guess it's really hard to make any strong determination, but do we think we've seen enough already to say they're going to be a lot better than last season?
I mean, they won't be worse.
I guess not. I guess they could have dropped by it, like, one more ranking from 31st worst pass defense to 32nd, but
I mean, I think this team will live and die on Mike Daniels' health on defense. Without Mike Daniels, I think that defense looks totally different. Yeah, I mean, I was really heartened to see what I had been kind of talking about all preseason, which is just that they've really invested in a front three that can really collapse the pocket and get after the quarterback quickly. Like, just watching Mike Daniels be three steps into the backfield within, you know, a second of the ball having been snapped every down, you know, and getting so many more third down reps than he normally does. Like, mm-hmm. honestly, I think if Montrevious Adams is what they say he is, and Daniels and Lowry and Kenny Clark looked great too. If they all yeah. stay healthy, I mean, it's like a fearsome front three.
Now, they do need to stay healthy, and especially after the breaking news that we got today, because now depth is even more of an issue.
Breaking news.
Yes, this happened moments ago. Forgot to mention this right away, but...
Moments ago yesterday, by the time this is published.
Well, yes, as we record this. But anyway, the Packers have made... they've reshuffled their roster a little bit, so... Ricky Jean-Francois or Jean-Francois, whatever. I don't want to sound pretentious. I don't know how he actually prefers to pronounce it. But
John Francois.
There you go. Been let go. So as a veteran, he made it to week one, played a game. I think he saw only six snaps. So he's going to get his money.
Give
but
that
he is,
man his money.
He's, yep. he's no longer a Green Bay Packer. So they're now down to what? I guess five down defensive linemen on yep. their roster. With the
including
signing of
Montrevious.
Quentin Dial, and that's including Montrevious Adams, who's not fully healthy. They've also let go of Ladarius Gunter. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. I am old enough to remember Aww. When Ladarius Gunter was like the answer for Julio Jones and all these other big physical receivers. And now he is no longer a Green Bay Packer. Demaryius Randle, congratulations.
You are now
officially the Arius
of all time.
Do we have to retire this drop now?
No.
No.
Every time he does something good, I will be ready to cue that up.
All right.
Yeah. I think the drop stays as Demaryius Randle goes and as he continues to hopefully play pretty well. But Ladarius Gunter, short lived, man. That it went from a starting corner to a guy just buried on the depth chart,
he'll
and now
stick.
He's gone.
He'll stick somewhere though. He
I
has
think he
to.
Might. I think he might. But that's to clear room for Geronimo Allison, who is now. No longer suspended. He served his one game suspension. He's back. He'll be activated, and I assume he'll be active on Sunday night when the Packers take on the Falcons. So anyway, as back to the defensive line conversation that we were having, I think during the preseason and even in the offseason when we were doing this, I sounded like I was really skeptical of the Packers' ability to generate a pass rush. I think, Ben, what you said is dead on. Like, if Mike Daniels is going to be getting a lot more third down reps, which is necessitated by losing Julius Peppers. They trade Jaron Elliott. Who else? There's another guy who played. I'm forgetting somebody
Dayton.
Else. Dayton, yes. Guys who played on third down along with your edge rushers, the elephants. If Daniels is going to get those reps, like, their interior rush is so good right now that I'm not as concerned about the fact that Clay Matthews and Nick Perry are kind of the only guys on the edge.
Outside. Yeah.
So, yeah, man. Like, wow.
That front three is really, really good. And I remember, like, a couple months ago, I think Charles McDonald was like, who are the top five defensive linemen in the NFL? And he didn't have Mike Daniels on it.
Really?
Just like, yeah. And I was just like,
that's
I mean,
shocking for
there's
like
some
real
really good defensive
guy.
Linemen in the NFL. And I think, you know, like, I think Aaron Donald, guys like
yeah.
these are on that. And Sheldon, I mean, honestly, you know, the Seahawks front three is pretty amazing now.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a good transition to talk about. The offensive line of the Packers and how they fared in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did pretty well, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. They gave up quite a few sacks.
In the
beginning of the game.
They kind of settled down.
I would say better than what you would expect from Kyle Murphy making his first career start at right tackle and having to block, you know, Michael Bennett and company, like having to block one of the best rushing yeah. pass rushing teams.
If not the best. And I think I like how it's becoming kind of a ritual to throw some rookie in against the Seahawks in the first game of the season.
And have it
have
be
them,
okay.
Have them exceed expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, too, that Ty Montgomery was a very welcome addition and showed everything I wanted to see out of him. And I think a lot of that, too, has to give some credit to the offensive line.
Yeah. Rushing total is not tremendous. For Montgomery, what did he have?
But again, he's running against like the best front seven in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like,
and I felt like in a very Mike McCarthy way, I felt like they ran the ball a lot just to kind of offset the rush a little bit, give their offensive line a bit of a break.
And when he needed to, he got first downs and touchdowns. And, you know, I mean, like any sort of I'm pretty sure DVOA gives weight to picking up first downs and kind of situational stats. And I was watching one of my favorite fantasy writers on Twitter, 14-team mocker, get into it with Justice all game, back and forth about, like, 14-team mocker is just like, his yards per carry is terrible, blah, 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 blah. And Justice is like, Ty Montgomery's great. And, I mean, Justice also went too far the other way, and I wish he was on tonight because he had been saying that Ty Montgomery is better than Le'Veon Bell for the last couple of weeks.
That's a take.
It is jokingly, right?
No, not as far as I can tell. I mean, like
I'll give him a hot take. Air horn.
I think self aware of how ridiculous it sounds on the surface. But I you know, whenever the Packers needed to convert like a 3-yard first down play or score a touchdown right after a momentum swinging fumble, Ty did the job, and his receptions were great out of the backfield too.
Yeah, I think we'll see some more of that even as we go along. As expected, like it became very evident there's a lot of mouths to feed on that offense.
Totally.
When it felt like for all but one series, Davante Adams was kind of a non-factor. Now, I think he was also lining up on the right side of the field, which I believe defensive left Richard Sherman still plays the majority of his snaps there. But then there was like one series where it felt like McCarthy was like, I got to get Devontae involved. And I think he had all three of his catches, if I'm not mistaken, at least two of them on one series in that game.
And he still had 6 or 7 targets, I think.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not worried about any of them. If I were holding Devontae or Randall Cobb in fantasy, I'd be more, like, difficult. I'd have more difficulty trying to suss out, you know, who I wanted to hold on to at this point. But I think Packers fans can be grateful that no shortage of depth and weapons on the offense.
No shortage of weapons. Martellus Bennett obviously gave us a little bit of a look. I think that was one of my favorite plays of the game, was that it was a third down, if I'm not mistaken, conversion from Rodgers to Bennett.
Sliding head first like a lunatic?
No, I'm talking about the throw, the Rodgers throw.
Oh, yeah, just like, at the end of the game.
I mean, it's like, no, not that one either. That was a third down conversion. Bennett was running up the seam, just completely covered. There was nowhere to throw the ball in Rodgers.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and he caught it in traffic, yeah. And it was a nice pickup at a time where the offense seemed like it lacked a little bit of rhythm. They were in rhythm definitely on the opening series, and then Rodgers threw the interception. Obviously, you know, with the penalty, he still only has one pick six. He made a big deal about being outrun by a defensive lineman. He was also pushed in the back. Yeah. Lane got tossed. There was a lot of stuff going on in that play. If you were not listening to the game, like watching the game with audio, it was very confusing. I say that as someone who was not watching the game with audio at the time. I went and rewatched it, and I was like, what the hell just happened?
I was trying to figure out what was going on Twitter in a cab because my last shift at work like took too long. And
You missed the start?
I didn't see the beginning.
Yeah, so that drive, I thought they looked really crisp, and then everything went away after that, after the interception, and then the second half, they kind of got a little bit of that back. Martellus Bennett's going to be a really fun weapon. I think
Kendricks
we anticipated
too.
That.
Kendricks
got
a couple
of
targets.
Look. Yeah.
Like two tight end sets.
Poor Dick Rod.
He got a look.
He got a look too.
I definitely noticed him getting a look. And he looks svelte this season. Speaking of svelte, Eddie Lacy not making it happen in Seattle so far.
He's buried in that busy, busy backfield.
Chris Carson.
Only guy who had a little bit of success against the Packers on the ground.
I was a little surprised they didn't go to CJ Procise more at the end of the game when they were playing catch up.
Yeah, I was too. They couldn't establish anything. I you could have had
the Packers,
you know, Barry Sanders back there. I don't know that anyone would have been able to do it. When Mike Daniels is taking your interior lineman and like handing them to your running back as he's receiving the ball, that's what are you going to do?
That was honestly
there's nothing that you.
It
can
was
do.
Honestly one of the best games I've seen Mike Daniels play, and that's saying a lot.
But how? Not to go back to this, but like, is it the Seahawks offensive line? They have to be, if you're a Seahawks fan, the same way that like Packers fans have been so like mad for years, like how can we not fix this defense? Like how can we not get some playmakers? How could we have Jerron McMillan and MD Jennings starting at safety? Like you have a window where you have probably the best defense in football.
And a pretty good offense, all things considered.
And a pretty good offense, despite having not like that. That offensive line is so piss poor, man.
I saw a screenshot, and I'm sorry that I'm blanking on whoever posted this on Twitter. It might have been Aaron Nagler, but it was a picture of a screenshot from the game, and it was Russell Wilson running from his life, followed by three Packers defenders, followed by all of the offensive line.
There was one play where he had three guys in his face, like halfway through a 5-step drop. I honestly don't see almost anything to not be happy about in that performance.
Yeah, I agree. That I'm just saying, like, if you're a Seahawks fan, man, oof, like, you got to be sitting there wondering, like, that unit is going to stop us from winning Super Bowl, because, like, they are a Super Bowl caliber team, certainly a Super Bowl caliber defense, and that offensive line is so bad where it might not even matter what you have going on the other side of the ball. One of the biggest things in terms of like Twitter reaction that everything it was blowing up was when Martellus Bennett, we referenced the play already, had his quarterback's back when Aaron Rodgers converted late in the game, scrambling, dove headfirst rather than sliding. KJ Wright kind of, it wasn't a dirty hit in any way. Rodgers said afterwards it wasn't a painful hit in any way. Still one of those things where like...
You don't want to see it.
If
that's your ticket to the Super Bowl, you don't want to see that.
You don't want to see it. So KJ Wright dives at him, gets a little bit of a piece of him, and Martellus Bennett immediately just goes and decks him after navigating around Aaron Rodgers, because he kind of had to like shove Aaron out of the way to go and make that shove. If you didn't love Martellus Bennett already, I feel like you got to love that. But I was also shocked to see some people upset that he got a penalty. Now,
you were?
I guess I shouldn't have been, right? I shouldn't have been surprised that people were mad about that.
Not that a penalty was called, but rather fans thought that was a stupid thing for him to do.
Right. I think he knows, like...
Yeah, he's not an idiot.
I know it's heat of the moment, but I also think he realizes, like, we have the first down already.
Yeah.
Down and distance is important because you're trying to end the game just by getting first downs.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, like, I would be more upset if no one reacted. And the reaction of the players and the reaction of Rodgers afterwards talking about it and referencing times that TJ Lang has done it and JC Treader and all these guys have done it, like, that shit matters. And that got me really excited.
Especially, I think, because the Packers have such a reputation as kind of a finesse offense. You know, they're not going to run it down your throat. They're not going to pound you. You know, their offensive line are mashers, some of them. You know, Bakhtiari, I think, is definitely, like, a mauler. But I don't think their offensive line has a reputation of being like punishing. I think the whole game showed a significant, all offseason there was all this talk on the defense of kind of, you know, being meaner and tougher. And there always is that, right? Like any team with Mike Daniels being loud is going to have this kind of like, we're the toughest dudes in the room talk going on. But I know that during the offseason, there was kind of like a pitched battle between the offensive line and the defensive front seven.
Yeah.
Throughout about kind of like being the meanest, toughest guys.
Just trying to increase the intensity level.
Yeah. And I think that's a good look for this team.
Yeah.
Knowing that they can dish it out and dish it back. And they started getting some of that swagger last year. Like, I think the last time we played the Seahawks, the last time the Packers played the Seahawks, there was some, you know, there was that play where Devontae blocked Richard Sherman, and these kind of like ownage plays have given some swag to the team, and I think that's really important.
I heard some audio from Pete Carroll in his post-game press conference where he noted that he was disappointed that the Packers were more physical than the Seahawks were, because that's something that he really prides himself on is their physical defense.
Yeah, and our secondary was pretty physical. Kentrell Price is a you know, angry little guy wielding a 2x4. Quentin Rollins had some really good heads-up plays in the end zone. I did not see a single thing that I was not
so on the
impressed
on the Bennett play. We all like it.
Yeah,
right.
Who doesn't like it?
I mean, just people.
Losers.
Whose football sensibilities are different. Like
JS
this is
comments.
This is a game of violence, and if you're worried about the extra yardage on first down, then, like, dude, I can't help you, man.
I mean, it is like, one of those things where it's like, say the Packers, you know, run it 3 and out after that and are out of field goal range or whatever, and it somehow affects the outcome of the game, which is not something to be taken for granted against the Seahawks, you know, who can kill us in 5 minutes, apparently. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, if there was a postmortem of a breakdown, that would be one of those things that people look at. So what? I mean, if you're going to bother being upset about that, you know, after three plays later when it clearly doesn't matter, whatever.
Yeah. And even, like, just the way the game was going, too, I never felt like it put them in any significant... Like, again, if it's an epic collapse, and it's one of the things that will factor into it, but, I mean, come on.
I mean, if people... I've seen more of a reaction to that than Travis Kelce getting... I don't remember. I think he got a 15-yard unsportsmanlike for his nut shot against the Patriots on Thursday night. He had a big first-down pickup, and then as he was on the bottom of the pile, he, like, took the ball and pushed it directly into the groin of the player who was kind of getting off on top of him.
I missed that.
Yeah. No, and Kelce got ejected last season. And, you know, like, we're not going to... I guess we probably won't mention the elephant in the room in the reactions to those various players. But...
yes. Anyway, the physicality thing, I love that. That's it's rare. Like, it feels like the Packers are never like the bully.
Yeah.
You know, they're never the hammer, they're always the nail. And I felt like from right when Randall Cobb like ducked his shoulder down and bowled over Jeremy Lain and got up in his face, like that a tone was set and it was that way the entire game.
Yeah, and there were a couple runs early on from Ty Montgomery too where it's like maybe it was only a couple yard gain, but he was like letting them know, like, you want to take me down, and you get my shoulder.
And the pieces that are going to kind of come in more and more throughout the season, like Josh Jones, like those are heavy hitting, mean dudes.
Speaking of Ty Montgomery, that play where he like kept his feet. I know he was out of bounds and it was kind of like a whatever play, but when Earl Thomas basically like was coming downhill with a head of steam and just whacked him and he like spun and then he had a guy like they almost called a horse collar on it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a horse collar, and also, like, without even going to the ground, can it be a horse collar? I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, that was cool. I mean, the Packers are strong.
I'm not going to... You know, the real David Johnson is gone for a little while. Ty Montgomery is the new... I said that in the middle of last season. He's about the same size.
Yeah.
About a little less fast, but similar shiftiness, good receiving ability... Like, I saw everything I needed out of Ty Montgomery to think that this team is, like, there's no weak spot. What do you look at after that game and say, like, that's the issue?
Just waiting to see what the Atlanta offense does to that secondary. That's basically it.
It's a big test, but it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be really fun. We'll talk.
Because Atlanta had a hell of a time beating the Bears.
Yeah.
Which is a testament to the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bears also, like, didn't have anybody to catch passes other than Tariq Cohn and... You know, still got run over.
I was shocked that Atlanta didn't give Mike Glennon fits and, like, have him turning the ball over, like, three or four times and everything.
Testament to John Fox.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll talk a little bit more about the Falcons coming up, but you mentioned the pieces coming in. I guess we should address maybe sometimes I get too caught up in Twitter and there aren't that many fans talking about this, but it seems like there was people who... took more of an interest in what T.J. Watt was doing than what their own team was doing. And because, he had a sack, right, in
he
the Steelers
win? Two sacks and an interception.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, he had a monster game.
Okay.
No doubt.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Again, these are things I ignore because, like, I don't really care.
Granted, it's the Cleveland Browns, but...
It's the Cleveland Browns.
I mean, and his interception was he was in coverage and stretched out, and it was a fancy pants game.
I want to say two things,
Mr. Watt.
One is that I don't think it's not like Ted Thompson thought that T.J. Watt was going to be a bad football player.
He might have.
I don't think that's true. But I also the other thing that I wanted to say was that the thing that I was hearing from fans on Twitter or reading from fans on Twitter that was a big deal. Was that T.J. Watt superseded...
Kevin King?
No.
James Harrison.
Yeah.
Oh.
James Harrison is also 37.
Yeah, he's 59.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
not a big deal.
Yeah. I think this was not the best draft for the Packers, and I think I kind of made that clear back when we did the draft episode. And I think there are some kind of shiny rookies that will make people... You know, Kenny Golladay had a great game. Who else? I mean, Dalvin Cook had a great game. A lot of rookies had pretty solid games.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt, probably the strongest on the defensive side that I can
think
of.
T.J., yeah.
T.J. All that said, to to know that the Packers invested the mid-round capital that they did in Montrevious Adams and Vince Beagle and not have any sense of how that's panned out yet, I'm a little hesitant to be like, oh my God, I wish we... Because I think longer term, Kevin King is going to be as valuable as TJ Watt, probably. I mean, granted, he's... They're probably... I would say that outside linebacker and cornerback are roughly valued the same level in Ted Thompson's mind, right?
Like, sure.
I think his drafting patterns show that. Kevin King has more physical tools lending itself to long-term success than TJ. What's the other one's name? There's TJ? The fullback. No, there's the fullback.
Derek, I think.
Derek.
Glenn.
Yeah.
He's the odd man out.
Yeah.
It's not Glenn Watt.
Is his middle name Jay? Is he DJ Watt?
I don't know.
Anyway.
We're in the weeds, guys.
But no, so I think the Packers are in a position where they don't have to slot in Kevin King. And it's probably best if they don't. Because I don't think they need to. And I think he's still learning the game at a professional level. Longer term, you know, I'm not gonna get upset chasing the flashy lure into the depths.
Yeah. I just think it's dumb.
That was really poetic. Sorry. Yeah. That was nice.
That's what journalism school does to you, man.
I think it's dumb to try to one game in, like, make a judgment on a draft class. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just not
no, it is.
That.
But I mean, I can also, I can totally understand why people want TJ Watt, especially in Wisconsin.
If he went anywhere else.
Anywhere
no
else
one gives
than the Steelers?
If it's just rookie linebacker.
Oh, you mean if he went somewhere else for college?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, no, it's just like, oh, look at this guy. Maybe there'd be some people like, oh, you know, why didn't we take him? We clearly needed an outside linebacker. But like, they also desperately needed defensive back help.
Yeah.
Like, they really, really needed secondary help. And TJ Watt is playing, like you mentioned, because James Harrison is a dinosaur. And TJ Watt probably doesn't have the opportunity to make as many plays as he's making on the Steelers if he's a Green Bay Packer. Because how often do we see, like, their second team outside linebackers? Not very much, right? I mean, Ahmad Brooks got a concussion. We saw Kyler Fackrell a little bit.
Kyler Fackrell showed up on his one play.
And maybe if TJ Watt comes into camp and he's amazing, then, you know, they make an effort to get him on the field more. But also, Nick Perry and Clay Matthews were both playing really well. Like,
Yeah. You're
not going to take them off the field. TJ Watt has to play in Pittsburgh because there's... James Harrison's had a roster spot reserved at outside linebacker for them since I was born.
Let's be clear, too, that TJ Watt... None of this is to take away from TJ Watt having a great game.
No,
and being like a fine football player.
I'm not saying he's not going to be good.
But, you know, the people complaining about TJ Watt the week after the Packers beat the Seahawks at home in a game that bookies considered a pick-em.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like...
That's frustrating.
For me, the problem with the draft wasn't even that pick. The problem with the draft was the later picks and using unnecessary picks on wide receivers that they knew probably wouldn't make the team. But
I mean, it's a sign also of a perennial contender that fans need to, like, find these little things to nitpick about so that they can have their Twitter meltdown.
Yeah, it's like if I were a Patriots fan right now and I had just watched that game and, you know, the first pick that they had in the draft was a third rounder and he got hurt in the preseason, I'd be like, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, that's just how it goes. That doesn't mean that the Patriots aren't a well-run franchise.
That's exactly what all Patriots fans sound like to me.
Yeah, it's true. Gronk.
That's the noise Gronk makes, actually.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually speak.
So, like, whatever. If people want a nitpick, that's fine. TJ Watt, fine football player. If you staked your Twitter draft reputation on TJ Watt, that's great. I wish him nothing but the best, but I'm not going to, like, be crying into my soup over... I'm just coming up with metaphors.
That was less poetic.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I don't...
Yeah.
Do people... Anyway. Yeah, so whatever. If you're not in a good mood after watching the Packers beat the Seahawks at home on the first day of the season in a game that, you know, really could have gone either way. And honestly, could have gone either way had that pick six held up. You know, it could have been a totally different game. Take the good. Don't get upset about, you know, draft picks that didn't happen.
Well said.
Yes. All right, let's. Why don't we get to our Mac track of the week? Should I not add of the week? Should I just call it Mac tracks? Whatever we're calling it,
Mac tracks.
Let's hear from the head coach because I thought his opening statement was pretty interesting, especially his frustration with the home fans.
Well, here we go. That's a polluted mindset. It's lonely being a Warrior sometimes. First-year players making a big jump into their second year. Well, that was a fun game to win. I just say this, the thing that jumped out clearly from the beginning of the game and really the whole weekend, just what an incredible atmosphere. Obviously, had a beautiful day, but the crowd was phenomenal. The energy at Lambeau today was awesome. You know, our crowd was so excited, they even cheered when we had the ball.
All right, so Aaron Rodgers also referenced this in his post-game press conference because there was the wave that happened, right? The actual wave, which
the Mexican
still
wave,
do.
As I believe it's known.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Anyway.
Wow, is that breaking news? I've never heard that.
I'm pretty sure.
Google will talk.
Yes, right. Yes. So
we're professionals.
Rodgers was upset because the wave went around Lambeau Field while they had the ball. Jordy Nelson is like jogging to the line of scrimmage and doing the reverse of like, you know, when you're flailing your arms up and down trying to get people hype. He's like trying to get people
He's
quiet.
Doing the angels in the outfield thing.
And Packers fans, oftentimes I feel like you can hear Aaron Rodgers' entire cadence. You can hear even Corey Linsley like, you know, calling out who the mic is and doing
burping.
All this stuff. And yeah, or saying "oh fuck" again when the snap is just
it was
rolled
another,
on the
it was
ground.
It was a pitch perfect cover.
It
of
was
his
like
earlier.
Yeah, it was exactly the same. It was great. Oh fuck! Like as the ball just rolled on the ground. Usually you can hear. Yeah, like that one was
a little more fast paced. This one is a little more relaxed. I
easily
think.
Could have been from Sunday. It was like the exact same thing. But anyway. Packers fans were loud when they had the ball, and I love that McCarthy referenced it because it clearly bothered him, even though he's like, oh, our fans are incredible, blah, 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 blah. But, and Aaron Rodgers kind of in his snarky Aaron Rodgers way with his little smirk referenced it in the post game as well. Is it fair to say, like, I understand the excitement, your defense is playing so well, you're probably really drunk at that point in the game in the fourth quarter. If you are a fan who likes to go and party while you're at Lambeau Field, you paid a lot of money to be there. But is it fair to say, be better? Like, know that if you're going to bitch about Martellus Bennett protecting someone and getting a penalty, like, what if they get a false start penalty that's your fault because you're screaming? You should know better. They're trying to close out the game.
The Packers' live experience is, like, mostly foreign to me. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
I've never been to a game as a fan, so I'm
only as a professional.
No,
only with a lanyard on the field.
You don't really hear it as much.
Laying the humble brag.
Were you really at games as a pro?
Two full seasons. Yeah, it was.
Oh, but you were in the press box.
Right.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you're a little insulated up there, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you can hear, but like, it's not. You're not in it. You're not.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I've seen pictures of, like, you and Nick Bornheimer on the field. Get out of here.
Well, that's in pregame. I'm not. You're not on the field during the game. You need a special field pass that I did not have. I was one of the, you know, thousand people.
And Zach,
up
you've been
the
to games.
Box.
I've been to a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your? I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm in any position to criticize because my sample size is basically zero.
I can't say that I've experienced it firsthand. I will say also, though, when the few times that I've been to games, my memory is a little bit hazy. I will say that.
So you might have been yelling, you know, on a.
I like to think that I'm pretty well behaved. I like, you know, I understand what the offense is trying to do. I know when I'm supposed to get loud, especially thanks to
the giant flashing billboard signs. I mean, maybe what they need is just like something that just says "get quiet."
Yeah,
there you go.
Shut up.
Yeah. Some places do that. They put that on the screen.
Shut the fuck up.
I think it's really simple. If you're on offense, just contain yourself until the play unfolds.
Until the ball's in the air.
Yeah,
Then you can get hyped, and then get more hyped, and then be quiet again.
If you're on defense, make noise and help them out. But also, like, I think my, you know, this comes down, the only reason I actually care is because just, like, I want, can we just get rid of the wave? Like, if it weren't the wave that Rodgers referenced, and
racist.
If it weren't them doing the wave during the game,
racist.
I probably wouldn't be as bothered. But, like, why are we still doing this? Like, why is this still a thing?
What was the Google result? Is it
the
Mexican?
Yeah, it's known as the Mexican wave in the English-speaking world outside of the United States.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whoa, we're having a fit over here.
I don't know where that comes from, but...
Yeah.
Wikipedia.
My own little coughing fit.
Or outside of North America, mind you. So I guess the Mexicans don't call it a Mexican wave.
So why would other people call it that?
No idea.
Keep talking.
Okay. Yeah.
Really going off the rails here.
Too deep into the wave, maybe.
People are cheering when the Packers are on offense. Alex is coughing while we're trying to record a podcast.
just don't organize a wave that's a stadium-wide thing when when the Packers have the ball trying to close out a game.
Well, here's the thing.
There's
nothing
else to say about it. Who cares? I mean, really, at the end of the day.
Here's a thought. Maybe they organized the wave when the Packers were on defense, and the Packers spent so little time on defense.
There you go.
That by the time the wave made it all the way around the stadium, they were back on offense.
Yeah. I mean, let's be real. The wave is fun.
Is it?
Yeah, what's wrong with the wave?
No one likes the wave.
Get out of here. No, the wave is fun. I would love it if there were beach balls bouncing in the audience. Like, I'm for
beach
it.
Balls are different. The wave? You do it?
What's
like, if the
wave
is coming by you, you're standing up?
Hell's yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
I don't know.
We don't all have press passes.
No, I'm not saying
what,
that.
What would happen if you're in the press box and you try to join the wave?
You'd probably get thrown out. Although there are some people who are cheering up in there. Let me tell you.
I'm going to save this episode, cut this audio in case Ben Foldy ever wants to run for office. Because then I can have like a...
Ben Foldy does the wave.
Yeah, Ben Foldy likes the wave.
All right, yeah. Well,
I just think it's funny that we just went from being like, fans don't have a right to be mad about TJ Watt to like...
They don't have
now
to stand
the
up.
Same fans are listening to us be like, oh my God, these fans are idiot. It's like, whatever. I don't know. I believe if you pay whatever grotesque price you pay to go to a Packers game, you can do whatever the hell you want.
I mean, I mostly believe that.
I'm going to cut that short and say not whatever the hell you want, but in general, I mean, I agree with the spirit of what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, like, do you remember that opening day at Miller Park? I think it was at Miller Park. It might have been at County Stadium when they gave out ceremonial baseballs. And then basically, I don't remember if they had to call the game, but they definitely had a massive problem with drunk people by like the seventh inning, just all throwing these ceremonial baseballs into the outfield and hitting people.
God.
So like, I mean, yeah, the Packers.
This country has a long history of regretting, you know, baseball promotion.
I was born in the city, born in the city of 10 cent beer night.
Oof.
Anyway, I think we're not meandering towards any point in particular anymore.
All right, let's.
You got your vitriol out towards happy people, Alex.
Yeah,
you satisfied?
Quit being happy,
Grinch.
Watch it in silence, damn it. All right,
says the guy who had to watch it in silence.
Yeah, I know. I was listening to the radio call as it was happening though, and Larry McCarron wasn't all too pleased either. Anyway,
let's look forward. Let's stop looking back and start
Packers,
looking forward.
Falcons revenge game. It's time for the Packers to get their lunch back, as some would say. The Packers are heading to the brand new.
Who would say that?
I don't know.
A thing?
That's like a phrase. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We got shiny lures, crying in soup, getting lunch back.
Well, to steal someone's lunch, right? That's a thing, right?
Yeah.
They stole my lunch.
Yeah. You got to get your lunch back. I don't know.
Nobody's ever stolen my lunch.
Stealing your lunch is definitely a thing. I don't know, like, getting it back is not a thing people say, but it is acceptable.
No, it's
as an
a thing people say.
They do?
Yeah,
you gotta get
at
your
least
lunch
my
back.
High school coach always said it. Yeah.
The weeds are tall, my friends.
Let's go, kids. You gotta get your lunch back.
You're so in the weeds.
Yeah, seriously. If you get your butt kicked on, like, one rep,
go get your lunch back.
Yeah, man.
All right. Packers, Falcons.
Hit the bully in the face. They're opening their new stadium.
New stadium.
cool stuff. It's probably going to be really loud.
The Giant Sphincter.
Looked okay, and the Packers looked really good. Packers, Falcons. We're going to get a really nice test is basically all I got. I am reserving most judgment. And again, like maybe they come out and they look that great again defensively against the Falcons, but the Falcons personnel is much better, and they have at least offensive linemen who are going to like try. I guess
Falcons offensive line is good.
Yeah, like I'm saying, like it's going to be the secondary will be tested. And I'm not just saying that because of Julio Jones and Matt Ryan, the defending MVP. It's because Matt Ryan at the very least is going to have
more time.
Like, a millisecond.
Yeah.
He's not going to have three Packers jerseys in his face by the time he could even like look at his primary receiver at the beginning
read.
Of his progression. So,
which is why I've been urging everyone to hold their horses on the Packers defensive praise. Only because it's one game, talking about Seattle now, against one of the perennially worst offensive lines. Now we get a real test against the Falcons.
At the same time, you also play a defense that is a little less challenging, and I think it's safe to
They're
say
fast.
That. They are a fast defense, but you know the Bears had a fair amount of success moving the ball against them and only lost by 6, so I would think that Aaron Rodgers should.
And that came down to the last drive, too.
Yeah. a sack, I think. Brooks Reed.
And two dropped.
Fourth and goal.
Two dropped passes in the...
Yeah. Bears had a shot, man. Yeah. They could have won it almost in walk-off fashion. Anyway, in the same way that the Falcons' offense presents a greater challenge, the Packers' offense, I think, is going to look more in rhythm and put up some higher totals than they did against the Seahawks because...
Last year the game was 37-35? What was the final in that?
In the regular season?
Yeah, last season.
I don't remember the final, but it was like as advertised.
It took the over.
Yeah.
It was a shootout. Someone stole someone's lunch, I think.
Yeah. It's time for Aaron Ripkowski to get his lunch back. Yeah. Let me tell you that. After fumbling, I'm never going to forget that damn fumble. The fact that Ripkowski
was
like playing running
back. That
was
honestly the least of my problems in that game.
Oh, no, but not for me, my friend. The fact that Ripkowski is getting carries and at one point was the Packers running back last year was a huge issue. And it made me so mad. And the fact that he fumbled, like one time he did something good where I was like, oh, maybe he should get some carries. And he, whatever. Fumbled. There's no way we're winning that game.
So are we taking the over then? Do we think this game looks like last year?
I think that's. Let me pull up. Let me get what the actual total is on this game and tell you if I'm taking the over.
I'm gonna go with no. I mean, I don't know what the over under is, but I mean, if it's like whatever 48, maybe. I just don't think it won't be the slop fest that last year's regular season matchup was. I think the Packers defense will be a lot sturdier of plywood than they were last season.
All right, the total.
The metaphors. The
total. Has opened up at 54.
54? Yeah, I take the under on that.
Yeah, that's high.
I'm also taking the under.
I think I'm going to take the under on that as well. Also, the Falcons are only 2.5-point favorites opening line at home. So...
Yeah, I mean, one reason I'm inclined to take the under is that I think that the Packers will look to slow the game down with Ty more than they were able to last season when they, as far as I know, didn't have a running back in week 7 or whatever that was.
Yeah.
It was kind of that weird sweet spot between Eddie Lacy going down and Ty kind of coming up and Aaron Rodgers having literally nothing to do except throw as far as he could to whoever was there. So I think I take the under, and I think that are we doing picks already?
Yeah, we'll do picks.
And then we'll go through the pick 'em and give some shout outs.
I will take the Packers the spread's a pick 'em, right? And I will take the Packers. I didn't see anything this week that made me think I shouldn't, and I saw more weakness out of Atlanta than I expected, so I will take the Packers. And I think that offense is going to regress. The Atlanta offense was due for regression no matter what.
I agree. I also think I'm going to pick the Packers. I picked the Seahawks last week. I don't love doubting my team. That time I felt like I had legitimate reason. Like you said, I don't think if we're just going off of what we know, the 2017 version of each team right now, there's no reason to doubt them being a little bit better defensively. And the Falcons offense doesn't regress, I would be shocked. So I think it'll be close. But given that the Packers are 2.5-point underdogs, I would take the Packers with the points. I actually think they go to 2-0 in a really tough two games to open the season.
Yeah.
Zach?
I have no additional points. You guys said it all. I'm taking the Packers. I'm taking the under. And I think it's going to be a close game.
Yeah, I think so. All right, well.
But before we move on, can we talk about one other interesting thing from week one, which is that maybe the NFC North is better than we thought it would be?
Just Bears giving the Falcons a fight. Bears Vikings looking really dominant.
Detroit looking pretty solid.
Matthew Stafford 4 touchdowns. Yeah. 2 of them to his new wideout, Kenny Galladay.
Against like a good secondary.
Yeah.
The NFC North is always the tale of two seasons, the first 8 games and the second 8 games. So let's hold our horses on that.
Yeah, it's the first 8 games where the Packers look lackadaisical and the Vikings and Lions are finally coming from.
I mean, I don't know.
And the last 8 games where the Packers just...
There's a lot of crap in the bed and a lot of running the table going on.
I think the Saints
are
bad. Yeah. The Saints are bad and we shouldn't read too much into Minnesota's performance on offense. But they were pretty effectively shut down on defense without some of their best players. And Detroit might just be better than we thought. Kenny Galladay. I mean, I think Kenny Galladay had some home run plays that made that scoreline look better than
yes.
it should have. But
I also think the Cardinals, like I get that the Cardinals defense is really good, but like
not a great football team at
that window closed. And yeah. Carson Palmer's
done.
Really, like he looks his age and he's probably done.
Yeah.
He looks like James Harrison back there.
Yeah.
Hey-o.
Yeah, for
trade
sure.
Trade him for TJ Watt. and no David Johnson's gonna hurt, obviously. But
yes, that's gonna. Yeah, you're right. Damn, Arizona's going to be in for a long season, I feel like.
Probably.
Yeah. Good thing we play also, the West.
And I mean, the Bears closer than they should be. Except now they have nobody to catch the ball again, which is kind of an issue. Mm.
I think that the Bears are going to be one of those teams that looks okay when they're overachieving.
I think the Bears are going to be really annoying to play. Like, we'll beat them. The Packers will beat them. But they will be they'll be annoyingly closer than they should be.
Let's do the pick 'em. All
do
right.
we have a sounder for that?
Not yet.
Oh.
We will.
For this one?
We don't yet.
All right, let's update the standings in our pick 'em.
APC.
We just gave you all of our predictions for the Packers game, and now as we update you on our standings, you will see that you shouldn't trust anything we say in terms of predicting games. Where are we at right now? Do you have the standings in our APC pick 'em league?
I do. Well, firstly, as advertised, we three are really bad at picking games.
It's so week one.
I know. Well, we've got 29 people in the league. I think actually 28 technically. I'm coming in at number 16.
Tied for 16.
Oh, yeah, with APC's own Jordan Smith. Ben, you are right behind me there, number 18. Alex is bringing up the rear between we three at number 20.
Woo!
But
that's a pretty tight cluster.
A tight cluster of mediocrity. As the listeners are putting us to shame, shout out to Mateus leading the pack with 110 total points in week one.
That's a lot of points.
That's a lot of points.
Does that mean he was perfect on the week?
No,
almost.
No.
Almost perfect.
Damn.
He missed about, I think, 18, 20 points.
Oh, okay.
Price is in second place. Dan is in third place. Lewis and some guy named Chris who has the same last name as me. JK, that's my brother. What's up?
All right, so that's the latest on the Pick'em League. If you are just learning what this is about, why don't you hit us up on Twitter, theapcpod, or email us, theapcpodcast@gmail.com. It is not too late to join, and you could probably make up the ground loss of missing out on a week.
Certainly, you'll definitely beat us three.
Yeah, you don't need all 17 weeks to get the best of us, but maybe for others. Mateus, who is just off to a wicked hot start.
And I promise I'll work on some sounders to make this whole segment a little bit more ceremonious next time. And also want to shout out to anyone who, as you referenced, may not have known about this and wants to get involved, that we'll be giving away an APC t-shirt to the highest placing listener, and maybe you can come on the show and gloat as well.
There you go. All right. I think that'll about do it, right? We ready for some polka?
To get
up out of here? I'm ready for a nice Sunday night matchup. Some Carrie Underwood in my life. She's still doing it?
Oh, Sunday night.
She's still doing it, right?
It's a different song, but yeah.
Some Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, who's going to educate us all. Enjoy the game. And...
wait, when is the game? Love that soundboard.
Yeah. Go Packers. 2-0. Here we come.
Go Pack, go.
Yeah.
Get your lunch back.
Don't cry in your soup.